Welcome to Mintcast, the podcast by the Linux Mint community for all users of Linux. This is episode 258, and we're recording live on Sunday, January the 8th, 2017. I'm Rob, and with me on the podcast again this week is my good buddy Isaac.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yeah. And Merry Christmas, and Merry New Year, and Happy Christmas, and all of the other requisitely correct things that one says around the holidays. So we typically, as is our practice, record every other week on Sunday afternoons, but we haven't done that in
a month.
These many weeks now, but we're back on a regular schedule again. Keep an eye on the Mintcast website for the latest schedule. I believe it's even up to date. Live stream information changed this time. Because Kaywisher's Piecaster moved into a new house. No, I don't know what they did, but the address changed anyway. So check the live stream information at mintcast.org/livestream. And we are in the Mintcast channel on irc.spotchat.org. And we have a large cast of highly... what could we say about our group of IRCers today? They're an animated bunch. There has been a wealth of discussion already in there.
They are the backbone of the podcast.
Oh, hadn't thought about that. Yeah, they probably are, actually. Yeah, that's a nice thing to say. If you see something that you'd like to hear about on the podcast, head on over to the Mintcast subreddit. I think one of you did that. In the time since the last podcast and now. So it does get some attention. You could also just send an email to us as well. That would just work as well. But let us know. So later on in the podcast, we're going to be talking about predictions and the future of Mintcast. The future of Mintcast. I wonder what that means. I don't know. In any case, I would like to maybe have a look at some recent news before we do that. So let's see how that works. So Isaac has asked special dispensation for a special announcement to be made at this point in the podcast. Well, take it away, Isaac.
I wouldn't really say it's an announcement. I just thought the best way to start off the new year.
I was trying to set stuff up.
I'll give you a
lead in that you could kind of just say whatever you want.
Well, I guess the best way to start off the new year is to automatically take us down a tangent. So,
outstanding. We're in the weeds already. We haven't even started yet.
This won't take long. I just have a quick question, and I'm not going to let us go too long on this, but I've always heard, not always, but I've heard from quite a few people that Debian is a harder distro to use, and I installed it yesterday, and I don't know why. Why is that? I don't see what's so hard about Debian. I'm really confused on like why I've heard this from people that, Ubuntu or... Mint is easier than Debian, but I'm completely amiss at why that is. Except for maybe the installer. That's absolutely it. After that, I don't know what is different or harder.
So this is true confession time. You tried Debian and you like it?
Yeah, I love Debian. Yeah. You know? But I actually sat down and installed it, and the installer's different, you know? It's not that cute graphical stuff that Mint or Ubuntu offers, but that's... Beyond that, I'm just confused on why I've heard this. I thought maybe you or anyone in the IRC or someone could send an email to let me know what I'm missing here.
So I think the reason that Debian historically has been identified as being harder to use than Ubuntu is because the Debian community takes a firmer view of third-party add-ins. And so when Ubuntu came along first... One of the things that they did is they just installed all these third-party device drivers and codecs and all this kind of stuff that it's not free software. And so the Debian is a free software release.
Okay.
And so they don't put any of that stuff in there. And so as a result, after you installed your Debian system, you had to then go and install a bunch of other stuff to get your system to actually work. Now, I think what has happened and what you're experiencing is that the Debian community has made a lot of the same strides that the Ubuntu community's made. And I think Canonical has pushed a bunch of their stuff upstream as well, which has been a real boon to Debian. And I think that it has, as a result, the release has got a lot better at hardware support than it was in the early days when Ubuntu first showed up. The other thing, so what desktop did you install with Debian?
Mate.
Okay, so you put Mate on it. So it's the default desktop for Debian is GNOME, right? GNOME 3?
I don't know. When I went to download it, they've got like every flavor in the sun nowadays. And since I already use Cinnamon for Mint and Qt or whatever, LXQt for Arch.
Right.
I just said, I like Ubuntu Mate, so I was like, Mate is a good choice. So I just
pulled
Mate
down. Yeah, so
you
put Mate on. And so, yeah, that's the other thing that I would say, I think, is that, and we've talked about this in the past, that a lot of, when you sit down and work on a Linux machine, a lot of the experience, the user experience that you have is driven by the desktop, not by the distro or the underlying Linux structure itself. And so if you connect up to a system that's got a Mate desktop and you're comfortable with stock Mate, then it will feel a lot like most other systems. Now, when you start to go, do software updates or do system level work, then it becomes really obvious whether you're on a Debian system or an Arch system.
Okay.
But if all you're doing is checking your email, browsing the web, running OpenOffice or LibreOffice or VLC or things like that from inside the desktop environment, it'll feel very comfortable and very much the same. I think that's what's happened. Because I've done the same thing. I installed Debian and I thought, oh yeah, this actually works pretty well. You know, it's not hard to use at all, and it you can install it. It's stable as a truck. And, you know, it's a nice distro. Yeah.
The only thing else I noticed too was my user, I immediately was not in the Sudoers file, which isn't hard to go and do, but I mean, it requires a little bit more. If you're brand new to Linux, I could see that being like, wait a minute, what are we talking about?
Well, yeah, so Ubuntu introduced the idea that there is no root user. And on Debian, there's a root user. You can log in as root. You create a root user and you create a normal user. And so if you want to do something, you su into root, and then you log into the root user, do it, and then log out again. That, which is the kind of the old school Linux way, Unix way of doing things, is that this notion of there being no root user and everybody just sudos to get stuff done, that's a new thing that Ubuntu introduced.
Okay.
Well, Arch is not like that, though, is it?
You have a root user. I set it up to where I'm the.
Oh, so did you? Is there a root user on your Arch system though?
I can't remember. I believe so. I just had to go and set me up as the root user. I think it's been a while.
You've vi sudo and put yourself in the sudoers.
File. I had to go down that road. And now that I think about it, the latest I've dealt with this same thing is when I put Debian on my BeagleBone, and immediately I got into the sudoers world. So I can see that being a little different, but
Bill and I point out in the IRC that there actually is a root user on an Ubuntu system. It just has no password, so you can't. The assumption is nobody ever logs into root. You don't log into root on an Ubuntu system, more on a Mint system, of course, because it's derived from Ubuntu, I think. So.
Gotcha. Okay, that's it. Sorry about the tangent. Thank you for...
So, while we're off on a tangent, the other tangent I'll take us down is my wife has been using a Windows system for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've mentioned before that I've thought a couple of times of converting her to Linux, and I'd say, well, why don't I just put Linux on your, oh, no, you know, this works fine. I like this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything different. So I'd say, okay, you know, peace in the house and all that. Well, her Windows 10 instance started to get slower and slower and slower. And so I looked at it, and there was something in that system that was just beating the disk to death. I'd sit there and look at it, and the disk is at 100% all the time. And, you know, it's got virus scanners and malware scanners, and I scanned it six ways from breakfast. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. In Googling for the problem, this appears to be, you know, a relatively well-known Windows phenomenon that it happens, and sometimes you can fix it, sometimes you can't. And so I had an extra hard drive laying around that was the same size as the one that was in her box. And so I said, okay, well, why don't I just install Linux on this computer, and I'll put all your files back and all the programs that you use back, because she uses Firefox, Thunderbird, and LibreOffice.
Okay.
Already. And so I'm betting that she's not going to even notice that she's on a different operating system for doing that kind of work. So I installed Linux Mint 18 Cinnamon on there and put all her apps on, copied all her files over, and she loves it. She said, I was trying to talk. I said to her, oh, we should go buy you a new computer. Oh, no, she says, this one's working great now. It's a lot faster than it used to be. So I never thought it would happen, but we have one Windows box left in the house now. And that's the one that I use to play Elite Dangerous and Dungeons and Dragons. And basically, it's a game box. It's the only reason I have a Windows box now. Because we're completely Linux.
Nice, so, nice.
Yeah.
Good start to the new year there.
Yeah. So, I was surprised, actually, at how quickly she just adapted to it. Because it, you know, Cinnamon anymore is close enough in terms of its form and function on the desktop to Windows that if you're comfortable in Windows, you'll be comfortable in Cinnamon. There are differences, but not at the level, not for somebody who never opens a command prompt. You know, if you don't ever do that and you're really just, you know, listening to music and surfing the web and, you know, and I put VLC on there because she's got a bunch of videos that she uses for rehearsals and stuff. And so all this, but she was using VLC on the Windows box anyway. So she's been using all open source software for a long time. And now just is doing it on Linux instead of on Windows. So,
woohoo!
Yeah. I was impressed by her adaptability. So, anyway, we should really attempt, in memory of our good friend Scott, who would be pulling his hair out by now, to try and move back somewhere close to a semblance of on track, should we?
Go ahead. We don't have who's starting to just, yeah, go ahead. You could dive into
To
the news. Feel free to.
So, in the news, and this will introduce kind of some of the changes that we're making here at the Mintcast. We're going to talk about that later on in the show, the future of Mintcast. But the news is going to be a little bit shorter, we think. You know, we always say this and it never happens. What are we, 20 minutes into the podcast and we haven't started the news yet. So it's going to be faster
now. Breaking the new year proper. Get attention.
Right, yeah. So given that we've been away for a month, there has been quite a bit of Mint news. And so we're going to be really just talking about Mint stuff because there's been so much of it. So Mint 18.1 Serena was released. And this happened, it's a little ways ago now. I guess it was towards the end of December. So Mint team is proud to announce the release of Linux Mint 18.1 Serena. And they announced the Cinnamon Edition and the Mate Division. The Mate Edition is out as well now. KDE's not out. We'll talk about that in a minute. So those are both out. And it's like 18 generally, it's an LTS release and comes with some updated software. Because we have been away long enough from podcasting, we can also announce that the upgrade path is there. And so this is all on blog.linuxmint.com. There are several posts on this. And so I went ahead and installed it on my daily driver box here, which is a, what is this thing? It's a Dell box of some description. It had been running 18. So, you know, it's a very simple procedure to upgrade to 18.1. And it went flawlessly. And so now I'm running 4.4.0-57 kernel. I updated the kernel to the one that, to a new kernel. It went to from a 3 dot something, I think, to a 4.4 kernel. Well, I don't know, what was 18 on it? Maybe it was a 4 point something kernel. But anyway, it's a 4.4 kernel. And then the recommended one is actually a different one that's in the 18.1 release. So I upgraded that as well. Cinnamon 3.2.7, which is now up to date with what I have been using on my LMDE box for a while. And there are a bunch of other changes in there, but it's a typical Mint dot release. In that there wasn't a huge amount changed, and the upgrade worked just swimmingly. Didn't have any trouble getting that to fly, and so sort of everything kind of was easy to do. And let's see. Somebody on there just said that they did it as well. Mint Spider. Hey, yeah, by the way, Mint Spider, welcome back. Haven't seen you in a dog's age. Because of our new schedule. I know you're busy at church on Sundays, and I barely squeak out of church on Sunday on time to get over here to do this. So it's good to see you back there. I've been following. Anyway, so Mint Spider, I digress again. Mint Spider says he used the official upgrade from 18.0 to 18.1 with no issues at all. So I did have one issue with the upgrade. And I'm embarrassed to admit this, but being it's a new year and it's just time for me to come clean. So I upgraded, right? And Cinnamon is here. And so one of the things that's in this Cinnamon 3.2.7 is the ability to move the menu around, right? And so I've been crowing about this menu thing forever. That used to be you had to have the menu on the bottom. You couldn't put it on the side, where it really intended to be on a widescreen monitor. It really belongs vertically along the left-hand side. And so one of the first things I did after installing it, or after doing the upgrade, was to move the menu to the left side of the screen. And so it popped up there, and at first it didn't really do the right thing. It was all kind of scrambled compared to what it should have been based on what I'd seen in LMDE. And so I monkeyed with it a little bit, and then finally it was something I had done wrong with the add-ins or something, or with the other toolbars or something. In any case, I finally got it sorted out, and it lined up properly, except that the menu didn't work. And so I could see the icon up there, and I'd go up and click on it, and the terminal would open. Hmm. I'm thinking, really? So I close the terminal, go up and click on the menu again, trying to get the menu to come up because I wanted to confirm where it was, and it would open the terminal. And so I thought, well, that's bizarre. So I took the menu, put it back on the bottom, and sure enough, the menu is there, right? Click on the menu, it opens up, no problem. And so I thought, well, that's strange. Okay, so I move it back up to the left-hand side, click on the menu. Up comes a terminal. And so I fiddled and fooled for I don't know how long before it finally dawned on my stupid brain that a long time ago, and I think I'm going to blame Bill MI for this, because I think he was the one who was put me on to Cinnamon Hotspots or Hot Corners. What do they call them?
Oh, yeah, Hot Corners. I pushed those pretty hard.
Okay, so maybe it was your fault then. So I remember I had... I had set up a hot corner in the top left-hand corner to open the terminal.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Well, if you put the menus along the left-hand side, that hot corner sits right on top of the menu button.
Oh.
And you can't get the menu button to come up because it's underneath the hot corner.
How you got your hot corner set up? Are you clicking on it or just going to it and it opens up?
I'm clicking on it.
Okay, see, mine just, if you just go there, they do it.
I just turned it off.
Oh, well.
Hot corners. Hot corners are from the devil.
That's why they're so hot.
They're evil. Because here's why I don't use them. The top left and bottom left corners on my monitor are the only ones that are actually usable, because I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 monitors here, and I'm running Synergy to move back and forth across three different computer systems, and so I can't actually easily move to the top right hand corner, for example, because when I move to the top right hand corner, the mouse pops off onto another computer.
So
I don't really have hot corners that are actually very useful.
I have the top left, bottom left, and bottom right as my hot corners, and one reason I can get away with that is because for the bottom left, I use usually the menu key to open that up, and
The
top right one I've had, and once I've got one, I will admit that hot corners are nice, but if you're using the mouse 24/7 and not using keyboard shortcuts,
right,
it can get a little monotonous, especially when you're trying to close down, say, a browser window or something of that nature. Not a tab, but a browser window as a whole. It can be a little hard if you've got that right hot corner, upper right setup is something.
To get that to close and stuff.
I have to admit to that. But
yeah, so I don't. I'm truly. You know, this was not something to do with 18.1, other than, you know, it enabled me to move the menu, which is what surfaced the problem. Because otherwise, the top left hand corners, there's nothing up there. It doesn't matter. That's why I put that hot corner up there.
I don't even know if I'm upgraded to 18.1. That's how.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So it can be hard just looking at the system. You have to run INXI or something to really figure out which version you're at. I've got a conky that sits up here and shows me the kernel version and the mint version and the cinnamon version and all my IP addresses.
Set up to where you have to, like they show the screen capture of, you have to select the option in the update manager and then say upgrade, like they always did with the 17 system, 1 through 3 or whatever.
Right, it's exactly the same.
If that's
pattern.
The only way you're allowed to upgrade, then I have for sure not upgraded, because I am just expecting it to get pushed down when I do my upgrades. So I need to do that.
Yeah, they didn't do that because, and actually in the upgrade process, they say, you know, one of the first questions you really ought to answer is, why do you want to do this? Because if nothing's broken, maybe you should just leave it alone.
No.
You know, don't fool with stuff. Which, of course, for us doesn't work, because we got to be able to talk about it and stuff. So there's really no way to avoid it. But that really is true. If you're just using your Linux system, you should consider not upgrading.
Well, that's one reason I love Arch so much, is I like being on the bleeding edge. So.
Yeah. So your system breaks and you're happy fixing it.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's one way to word it. Yeah.
So I think, like, for example, my wife's system, I think, is still on 18.0, because there's nothing in 18.1 that she particularly needs. Everything that she's doing is working fine. And, you know, I've been on vacation for 3 weeks, so I haven't had time to upgrade her system. I've been too busy.
Yep.
So once I get back to work, then I'll have more time, and maybe I'll upgrade her system. But I may not. You know, I may just leave it on 18, because it's an LTS. The Cinnamon version works fine. You know, everything is working, except Linux and printers.
What's that?
I will avoid going on my normal tirade, but Linux and printers.
Oh yeah. A few months,
hard,
several months back, I bought a printer. The scanning abilities on that printer will not work with any Linux computer. I have to use my wife's Windows computer in order to do any scanning.
To scan, yeah. Well, I can't even get it set up, and this is partly, you know, brain failure, insufficient gray matter on my part. I can't even get her, it's a USB printer, so it's not on the network, and so I have to set it up to share. Mm-hmm. I've done all the stuff with cups and set that all up to share it. I can't, and it says it's all connected up. I sit on my machine and I print something to the printer that I can see perfectly well. It says, okay, I printed it, which is all great, except I go over to the printer and there's nothing coming out of the printer. All of the computers say, okay, yep, we're good, but nothing ever comes out. So I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. There's nothing in the queue. There's no errors being generated. It just all doesn't work. So I'm a little annoyed by yep. that. So I'm in the mode of, well, I make a PDF and SSH it over to her machine and then go print it. So, which works fine, but it's just annoying. All right. So 18.1 is released. It's a non-issue in terms of problems. We probably won't even do a detailed review of it. We've got some feedback later on about this, I think. No.
Hmm?
Oh, it was in on the...
It was on the subreddit.
Was on the subreddit.
Someone said they downloaded it and didn't notice anything.
They said there was a subreddit post that said, yeah, I downloaded it and it just flies now. It's really fast. I'm thinking, well, okay, I did that and... I don't know. I didn't notice it was all that slow before, but it didn't seem to be a whole lot faster. So, anyway, other Mint news. Let's see. The December 2016 Mint report came out. And a couple of things that I picked up out of that, they have a new PIA manager. So PIA is a commercial company that sells VPN services. And so I guess the Mint guys must really like it. And they have a new application set up to help you set your PIA VPN up. I don't use PIA or a VPN really, so that one was, well, whatever. And they also talked in that December report about KDE, the KDE updates or upgrades for Kubuntu and Linux Mint KDE. So in Linux Mint 18, KDE will come with Plasma 5.8 out of the box. And so that's why there's no Mint 18.1 KDE just yet. There's another Mint a blog on the Mint blog specifically about Plasma 5.8, saying it's ready. You know, they're finished with it. It's in the Kubuntu backports landing PPA. While they're doing testing it, and then they're eventually going to be available for, they're going to put it in as an update for all Mint 18 KDE users. And Clem said that they were, if necessary, they will delay the release of Linux Mint 18.1 KDE to ensure that it ships with Plasma 5.8 out of the box. And I left some stuff in there in our show notes that shouldn't be there, I guess. Anyway, but I checked this morning or today, but I don't think 18.1 KDE has dropped yet. Do you have any?
No, I don't believe so. I believe you're right.
Yeah, so I don't think they've. The XFCE 18.1, the latest news that I hadn't seen yet was that there's a beta for the XFCE edition of 18.1. And normally they would do KDE and XFCE together, but I guess they're going to do XFCE apparently while they wait for Plasma 5.8 to stabilize and get out of the backports. And I guess you can do it now by just enabling the backports PPA in Mint 18.1 or Mint 18, and if you want to test it for them. So check the Mint blog for details about that particular situation. I'm not a KDE user, and I think you are not either. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So, I have heard generally good things about Plasma 5.8, and with that statement, I have completely exhausted all of my technical expertise on KDE. That's it.
Sounds good to me. We'll have to brush up on it in the future.
I don't know anything about it. So, yeah, so if we've got anybody listening who is an absolute KDE fan, you know, just loves it and is a Mint KDE user and can come on and explain to us all about the vast goodness that is KDE on Mint or Mint KDE, we'd love to have you on, and we will chatter away and talk about Mint KDE. I see Mint Brain is barfing in the IRC again. Yeah, well, I don't know what the deal is. Anyway, I think that's it for the news that we're going to talk about.
Sounds good.
Something else that's burning a hole in your ear?
No, let's move along.
All right. The main show topic for this time, which is, well, the main thing we're going to talk about this time is 2016 predictions, how we did, because we went back to episode 238, lo, these many episodes ago, to find out what everybody predicted. So now it's embarrassment time as we find out how we did. And we've got a few predictions for 2017. And then we're going to talk about the future of Mintcast. So you will not want to miss that. So if you got to go to the bathroom, get up now and do it while we talk about predictions so you can be back for the future of Mintcast. You'll want to know this. So, all right. So 2016 predictions. First off, I thought I'd get my own prediction in here first, because without anything to compare, any of the other prediction to compare it to, I actually think I did pretty good. Now, once you see the other predictions, you'll see how abysmally bad I did. But my prediction was that Microsoft and Canonical will announce a significant commercial relationship during 2016. For example, Microsoft buys Canonical, or Ubuntu is the OS on the Surface Book 2, or Windows 12 is an open source Ubuntu derivative, or something like that. So I'm going to claim at least partial correctness on this.
I would say, was it they didn't announce much, but there is a
relationship there. In fact, they announced the opposite to Windows is now open source. They announced that Windows now contains Linux. So Ubuntu on Windows. Is a fairly significant relationship between Microsoft and Canonical. And when we made the, you have to think back a year to when we made these predictions, you know, Microsoft was not yet perceived to be nearly as Linux friendly as they are today.
What is this right here? The rest of your, prediction, Ubuntu is the OS on Surface Book 2?
Well, those were all examples of the that didn't happen. Microsoft didn't buy Canonical. Windows 12 is not an open source Ubuntu. None of those things happened.
That one just struck me though of like the magnitude if that had happened of like whoa.
Well, yeah. So, did I have the courage to? Yes. Well, so I think that is actually a more likely prediction now than it was a year ago. That because Microsoft is beginning to distance themselves from being a Windows company.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I think it would not be a stretch at all to say that Microsoft would release hardware that was driven by Linux, that was a Linux operating system. They might call it Windows Linux version or something, but you know, for them to replace Windows with Linux is much more conceivable now because they have shown increasingly that they're not really as tied to Windows as they once were. So, anyway, I'm going to claim partial correctness on this one.
I think that was a good one.
So, well, Scott had predicted that, and we can trash him because he's not here, right? Scott had predicted that wearables will gain actual functionality with additional sensors and standalone capabilities. And perhaps a killer app or two. Wearables.
I don't, unless there's something I'm not thinking of.
Well, watches, the big wearable, and they, but, you know, smartwatches.
Like I said, there's something I'm not seeing here.
I don't, there's not, well, there's certainly no killer app, unless the killer app is morphing into fitness trackers, because that really is happening.
I feel like, yeah, that is slowly happening. As far as watches are concerned, I'm like, the pun intended, I'm watching them die.
Yeah.
Even with the tech savviness of them, they still have not taken off.
But if you look at something like the Fitbit Blaze, that's a smartwatch.
Right? Now we're
but
pushing
it's being,
it. I mean,
well, no, but it's being sold by a fitness tracker company, and its primary function is tracking fitness. But when you look at what it does, it checks your email. It
Does it? Okay, well, never mind.
Yeah,
then.
It does
okay,
a bunch of Android interaction things that were traditionally.
Well, my work,
thing, yeah.
My work doesn't count, but think about people I know. I do have a friend who has, what is it? One of those Samsung or Motorola watches. But I have not seen. And that's been a while since he got that. But he might be the only person.
Yeah, yeah. Those things didn't. The Pebbles sold because they were cheap and they lasted forever. All of the. I don't even think Apple Watches sold very well, but you know, Mint. Yeah, the Gear. Mint Spider says the Gear. Yeah. I've not seen many of them. But Mint Spider also says, you know, even my wife has a Fitbit that does a ton of things. And that really is true. Those Fitbit devices or fitness devices, generally Garmin have them and Fitbit, and there are several of them. They have, you know, they're turning into smartwatches. That's perhaps the killer app of wearable for the moment is that smartwatch. There is that fitness tracker. That seems to be the way that you sell them. So, I don't know. We'll give Scott at least as much accuracy as mine was anyway. So, he also predicted that Linux will be the OS of choice in auto tech, drone tech, and IoT tech. In brackets, as it was in 2015. Okay, not such a bold prediction.
I think I don't see...
I don't see this.
Well,
no.
I will say in auto tech, I don't see anything currently going on at the moment. Drone tech, I mean, there might be some Linux stuff, but I don't run in that world or in that circle. I've heard
well,
any
what's,
news.
What's running all these self-driving cars and the braking systems? And
I mean, honestly, and that goes right to what I was going to say with IoT stuff. It depends on what you're talking about because there is no going standard at the moment.
And Linux is not
it. Their own is running whatever. Yeah. Now, there might be some Linux in the background, you know, for whatever it is. But especially for IoT, I don't see. You could have sold me on that in the beginning of like 2016. But since now that we're already at the end of it, there's no way I would be like, oh, yeah, Linux is pushing IoT. But no, it's not.
No,
it is.
I don't think it is either.
They had a chance and that's left.
Well, yeah, and so a lot of the early things like Raspberry Pis and, you know, a lot of those early things that looked like they were going to be Internet of Things were all running Linux in some form or another. And I don't know whether that's continued. There hasn't been nearly as many real devices announced, I think, in IoT world as what people thought there might have been.
Well, I think you're right there, Rob. What's happened is the Raspberry Pi and all those boards, there's still the IoT ability of them, but that is the hobbyist makers arena for doing that stuff with those. And this is a perfect, I feel like a, not an analogy, but a parallel to the Linux, to the desktop idea, which is there was Linux there and it's always been there, but as far as the general public's concerned, it has been lapped and left behind, and now everyone, their mom, either has an Echo or only knows of stuff through the Echo. I don't see anything. I mean, commercials, TV, internet, whatever. But and then equally,
well,
Google Home has now stepped in, and it's just
so. What drives the Echo? What operating system is it?
I don't know in the background because Amazon does not let you tinker with that. That's their world.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Now you can develop skills for it, and they're more than happy to oblige to that world. But you cannot get into the granularity of it and be like Mycroft is trying to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I might be wrong with that, but I don't believe I am.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, what were your predictions? You had some predictions there as well.
I went straight specific on mine. I had Facebook will acquire Thunderbird. That was a big Failed. I said the,
somebody needs to, but Facebook didn't. Oh, well.
I feel like that's still, I can't believe I ripped this out, but I was going to put that this was the end of Yahoo this year, which would be that they get sold. Yeah. And I don't know why I didn't put that in. I just didn't. Yeah. And now it's turned into like, that would have hit pay dirt. But anyway, I said the Raspberry Pi will release two new boards.
Now, you wrote this after this happened, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But I got a little too specific on them. I said one will have built-in Wi-Fi. I was correct. But then I said it won't have no Ethernet connection or GPIO pins with the ability to solder them. So,
well, isn't that the Pi Zero? It doesn't have
I think that came
connection.
Up before this, though.
So. Oh, did it?
And then
that
I
looks
said,
like a description of the Pi Zero.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And then I said the other one would have more GPIO pins and require more power, which technically the Pi 3 does require more power, but this doesn't count for this. And I also said they'd remove some USB ports. And then I said, what am I going to come with Raspbian pre-built onto the board, removing the need of the micro SD card? I was completely wrong in a lot of that. So I got some small things right, and then I got a chunk of them wrong.
Well, so other than Raspberry Pi being the name, I just bought a board called... the Onion Omega 2.
Did you get yours in the mail?
I got it in the mail, yeah.
I'm waiting for mine. They say they got shipped. I'm just waiting to see where it is.
I promptly broke it. I don't think I broke it, but I couldn't get it to work properly. I'm giving away security secrets here. Part of the reason there's a bug in their software because my Wi-Fi password has a single apostrophe in it. And that screws up their... They don't handle it properly in the configuration files that they create. Hmm. And, you know, it's like a SQL injection attack. It treats the apostrophe as the end of the password instead of escaping it. They're not escaping the character properly.
Test your code!
Yeah, well, they just never tested it, I guess, with an apostrophe in it. And so once you do, and that thing comes with an embedded Linux system. It's a BusyBox thing that you can get into. And so I couldn't get it. It wouldn't complete the standard setup that they describe on the website, you know, to set the thing up. And so I got looking at it and trying to figure out how it worked internally. And you can get into a command prompt on the thing pretty easily. Oh. So I'm looking around, and that's what I determined is when I got looking at the way that the Wi-Fi was being configured, it was the config file that it was writing was incorrect, and it was because of that apostrophe. It hadn't escaped it properly. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't a bad password. Exactly. Martin Wintrous says this isn't a bad password with a single quote between the N and the T. And that's exactly the kind of password that I've got. It's got an apostrophe in it. And it makes it messes up string handling if you don't escape it properly with a backslash. And I can't, and in one place, one of the config files, they replace the apostrophe with a single apostrophe, a backslash, and then two single apostrophes, and then the rest of the password. And I looked at that, and I thought, I can see, I think, what they're trying to do. They're trying to concatenate the strings. I'm not sure that that parses out to the same password, though. And so that's where I'm currently lost, is I can't quite figure out how do I get that set up properly so I can set the stupid thing up so that it will actually connect to my Wi-Fi. And, of course, they use their own Wi-Fi infrastructure instead of just using standard stuff that normal people would understand. So I'm having to figure all that out. Anyway, so coming with Raspbian built in, this has got some sort of Linux built into it, this Omega 2 Plus device.
Yeah, if I ever get mine in the mail, I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, mine came last week. It's really neat.
Okay, well, that sounds better then. I guess I can't take credit for completely agreeing with Rob's prediction of Microsoft and Linux. I mean, Canonical. I just can't take credit for that. I can take credit for saying Mycroft will still not be available in 2016. So,
yay!
Yes, that stems from the fact that I am part of their Kickstarter, and if you are not part of their Kickstarter, I highly recommend going look at that comments page because it's getting pretty brutal. So,
oh really?
Oh yeah. And I have. I'm not nearly into in the camp of I want my money back right now. This is horse poop, but I am in the camp of I understand how things go. I'm totally back. You know, I'm gonna wait. But you guys have taken so long, and I think their marketing division kind of ran their mouth while they're not understanding what the workers were up to or going through, because yeah. They sounded like they were promising and doing all this stuff, and then a lot of stuff does not came around. So,
well, and this stuff is hard. You know what they're trying to do.
That's why I'm not in the camp of I want my money back, because I understand how hard this is and what they're going through, but I don't think they quite comprehend how much they're still like behind. I don't know. I mean, by the time I get it, I look at all the things that Echo and I understand I'm not into buying into any of that stuff, but if you just see what's going on already with the Google Home and the Echo and whatnot, it's just like, guys, man, you've got to.
No, it's amazing. And
you got to get together soon.
Yeah, well, and those are efforts that are backed by huge R&D organizations too.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
that's what they're doing. And
that's kind of goes, and then we'll just say, that's what I'm saying with the whole IoT, and it's just so a parallelism to the whole Linux on the desktop. Just you could see it one-to-one. Anyway, my last prediction was IoT will still not be a big deal with non-tech people. I don't know.
Well, people talk about it a lot, and actually one of the things that has happened this year is something called IIoT has become a big buzzword, marketing buzzword anyway, in the industrial automation world, this industrial Internet of Things. They're talking a lot about it. Nothing's there, but those are arguably tech people, so you got to talk to non-tech people. Go talk to my wife. She wouldn't be able to tell you probably what IoT was and doesn't care.
Yep,
it's not important.
And it looks like we have a prediction that Joe had, which was...
He stepped way out on a limb here.
Yeah, Linux Mint 18 will be a solid and well-received set of releases. 18.1 will follow suit and bring incremental improvements. I mean...
Absolutely right on the money, Joe.
Great prediction. I would agree with him.
Now we come to the hard part.
You want me to go first?
Predictions for 2017. So what do you predict will happen this year, Isaac? What's
going to happen? I got some really good ones. I think that this year the U.S. government will announce that you have to give them, that them being the government, a backdoor into your encryption concept if whatever you create uses or relies on encryption. I think this is the year that comes to a head.
You think they're going to try and do it because they have done this.
They tried a long time ago.
And then they declared encryption to be a munition.
And
so you couldn't export it. You can't export strong encryption. And I think that's still the case. But all that did was to just say to people, okay, I'll write my code outside the U.S. and import it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the year, and I only say it because Trump is coming into office, and I think some things are starting to fall into the suit that's going to create this. So
this could only apply to devices, though, because there's no way for them to actually enforce.
I'm telling you, I no one ever said we were. No one said it was going to be a sound bipartisan movement, whatever the words are, the buzzwords.
Yeah.
But anyway, next one is IoT will overtake mobile app development as the new IT frontier. So much like everybody's always like, oh, this is the year of the Linux desktop. This is for sure the year of IoT. I feel like this is year it blows up and everyone knows about it in the end.
Okay, so yeah, nothing happened in 2016 with IoT really. And so this is the year that it's going to explode into.
I think this is the year suddenly, like, you're going to be like at a friend's house or like your parents or somebody out of the blue is suddenly going to have like an Echo or suddenly have like smart bulbs or whatever the heck, a smart coffee pot that tells them to go, that they hate themselves and here's some coffee. So, but,
interesting.
Yeah, but I feel like this is the year that everything, suddenly those things become more integrated in other non-tech people's lives. Suddenly they're into that movement.
All right,
moving on. Since Minecraft was such a great hit, Microsoft is going to actually fill the void with something due to their love of Linux now and realizing they're behind the eight ball with the Echo and Google Home, that they're going to create their own thing that involves around more Linuxy stuff.
Well, around the Raspberry Pi or with their own hardware?
I would say if they, I guess it would have to be around the Raspberry Pi because they shut down. They tried to do a board of their own. I can't remember the name of these boards.
Yeah, they did.
The Galileos or something. But
well, Intel has one as well. All the chip manufacturers have one.
Yeah, I think they're going to do something that's going to kind of walk into that realm and help out stuff of that movement. So I feel like that will happen this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd agree with that.
All right, another great prediction is that Trump's Twitter account will get hacked. That is for sure coming.
It's got to happen. Absolutely.
I'm just waiting to see who does. It's coming. There's no doubt in my mind that's coming.
Well, okay, so here's the big question, Isaac.
All right.
How will we know? How will you be able to tell? There's no
it
way
had to
know.
Be something like, I'm sorry for everything I've said. Like something that
that's
like,
right, yeah. Oh, I am actually a big orange haired doofus.
Obviously,
yeah.
This guy is not. This is not him. This is.
Oh dear.
I think another prediction. My last two predictions are one. This year we will see. I wanted to predict. I got beat to the punch by freaking Yahoo again. I wanted to predict that this year there would be this upcoming year, there'd be a massive hack like we haven't seen before. And then Yahoo loses like a billion accounts and beats me to the punch. So I think instead of that, I'm going to say that we're going to start seeing there'll be a hack committed by some AI entity will start performing hacks. Don't know why, who, where, when. No, that I'm not predicting. I'm just simply saying that's going to happen this year. And then my last, what's that?
Is that already happening?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Well, I guess probably not. There's just from the point of view of are hackers using AI techniques in their hacking activities? I don't know enough about the security.
I don't know enough about that. I do remember DARPA had that challenge where they had like, what was it, computers trying to hack each other.
Oh, yeah,
that's
right.
That's about the most openly talked about thing I can remember of that nature. And then my last prediction will be that Isaac will change the pre-show music.
Well, that's never going to happen.
Yeah. So there you go. That is Isaac 2017.
All right. Well,
let's see what you got.
We'll record those for posterity. Okay. So predictions for 2017. First one is, in spite of a seriously poor showing at CES this year, I'm going to predict that there will be a major virtual reality, augmented reality killer app announced this year. And I don't mean just something like Pokemon Go. I mean something on the scope of the spreadsheet killer app for the PC or the smartphone. There will be something. This technology has been around long enough now that really smart people have thought about it enough. There's going to be something that comes out that just makes everybody wake up and say, oh yeah, I got to have one of those. In the vein of IoT taking over, maybe somebody's finally going to get a combination of Google Glasses and the Microsoft HoloLens, that somebody will actually make one that people are willing to use, or something in that AR/VR world is going to just explode this year. That's what I'm thinking. Continuing on my success last year, I'm going to predict that Microsoft is going to announce its own Linux distro, expanding on the smashing success of the Bash on Ubuntu on Windows initiative.
I like this prediction. I mean, not this whole Microsoft app, but I like it. I think you have a good shot at this one, for sure.
I think it might happen, yeah. So I'm also going to predict that Canonical is going to take Ubuntu in a completely weird direction. Weirder than anything we've seen before, and that's going to prompt the Linux Mint team to double down on LMDE finally.
All right.
We're finally going to move off the Ubuntu base. The main edition will be LMDE this year, I think. I'm going to predict that Joe Ressington is going to start a new podcast. And, of course, Late Night Linux, for anybody who's a Mintcast listener that isn't caught up on Linux Luddites. Linux Luddites has decided to end their run, and Joe and Jesse are starting up a new podcast along with Ikey Doherty and There's another person, I can't remember it right now, called Late Night Linux. So that's not this one. So my prediction is that Joe will start another new podcast.
I think that's a solid prediction.
This year, yeah. My final prediction is that Mint Brain will finally achieve self-awareness
this year. I don't know if you're on to a good start with that one.
No, I don't think so either, given that Mint Brain has been spewing Python error messages into the stream all morning or all day today. So anyway, I don't know. All right. So those are our predictions. Okay. So we promised you, or I promised you, a segment on the future of the Mintcast. So let's see, where is this coming from? Well, Isaac and I got together over the holidays to just do some navel gazing and other introspective type things about, you know, where should we be going? What should the Mintcast be doing? Some history for those of you that are new to the podcast. Mintcast started with episode 1 in November 2008.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, just a little bit over 8 years ago. So it's been going on for about 8 years. And over that period of time, it has changed as the hosts have changed. Mostly, it's been a general interest Linux and tech podcast, variety of hosts, formats. And not unlike a number of other podcasts that are running at the moment. And so it feels like the time has come to change the focus a little bit. And so as you look at this, I'm going through this and reading and watching the IRC at the same time, and it's all I can do to not wet myself watching you guys. Not Martin Winprist says it's going to be PieCast. Yeah, with Jar Jar. Okay. Anyway, so we got looking at what is a Mintcast. What's our niche? Who are we really? Who are our audience? Well, if you look at Linux in the context of Linux Mint, most of our listeners are either users of Linux Mint or who are interested in its ongoing development of somehow. In terms of general Linux, most of our listeners are not professional Linux gurus, although some are. It's not that there are none of you that are Linux gurus. Some of you are, but I think most listeners are probably not. Most are not all that interested in exploring Linux at a deep down interrupt handling in the kernel kind of level. Our listeners are, however, interested in how Linux works, at least at a hobbyist, what I would call a hobbyist level. They're not blind users of whatever computer is placed in front of them. I think our listeners really want to know how the machine works, and they're interested in topics like that. So where does this lead us? And this is something that that we've kind of been knocking around for a little while. Isaac and I have been knocking around for a little while. We're going to shift away from the news and a main topic kind of format. We'll cover news, but it'll mostly be maybe one or two stories. We're not going to be a news podcast. We'll cover news where it's interesting or relevant for Linux Mint. Like, we'll probably still mention when the Mint releases are coming out and some things like that, but we're not going to really make an effort to stay up on the latest in the tech news scene or even the Linux news scene. But we will continue to comment on the news a little bit. So we're going to downplay the news, and we're going to shift to talking about sort of three areas: Linux basics, understanding the kernel, and building your own Linux system. So in Linux basics, we're going to specifically try and look at all the bits and pieces that make up a modern Linux distribution, like Mint or Ubuntu or Debian or Red Hat. So we're going to try and answer questions like, we're trying to answer the question, what is Linux really? Because I think that's gotten to be harder and harder to figure out what Linux actually is. anymore. So we'll cover in the basic Linux or Linux basics area. We're going to talk about things like, you know, file systems and displays and command line commands and stuff like that. So Linuxy related things that are sort of the foundation building blocks. We did a little short snippet a while back on the date command, for example, just talking about the date command, what it is and how it works and where it sits in the system and how to use it, what you can use it for. So we'll do things like that and then a bit broader kinds of things like related to Linux as well. So that's the first thing. Understanding Linux kernel. So we're not looking to convert people into kernel developers. But we want to talk a little bit more about what this kernel thing is and what makes it up. You know, what's in there? What does it do? Why does it do it that way? You know, when they say, oh yeah, we're going to go from Linux 4.4.0-57 to 4.5.1, you know, what is that? What's it likely to change? What does that sort of mean? And then build your own Linux. In keeping with this theme, what we're going to do, Isaac and I are both going to embark on this, is we're going to start through the Linux from scratch and Beyond Linux from Scratch books. And we're going to build a LSB compliant system. So LSB is the Linux standard base. So we'll need to figure out what that is first, but we're going to actually work our way through Linux from scratch and Beyond Linux from scratch. Those two, they're not distros. They're actually documents. They're a description of how to start from a host Linux system and build a completely functioning Linux system from basically nothing. So compiling all the code that runs on the system from source. I've looked at that. I think we've looked at the instructions, and this is going to take us a good long while to talk our way through. I think once you had done it, you could probably run through both of them in a couple of days of kind of off and on. It's not a huge amount of work, but it's a lot of thinking and it's a lot of new material. Now, especially for me, because I've not ever really looked at Linux at this level before. I've mainly been a desktop with a dabble here and there in the command line. And so this is going down deeper into the Linux ecosystem than I've ever been. So it's going to take some time to learn how to do this. What the podcast is going to do is that we'll probably talk about the Linux basics that are related to kind of the current thing we're doing in Linux from Scratch. And there's 8 or 9 chapters in the Linux from Scratch book, and then maybe 15 chapters in the other one. And I don't know if we haven't really decided what the pace will be like. It will be whatever, you know, generates a half an hour's worth of discussion. So that may be a chapter, a podcast. It may be faster than that sometimes, maybe slower than that sometimes. But we're going to start in to try and do that and then talk about the challenges that we run into and what the technology means. Because I think Linux from Scratch is really good at taking you through kind of what you're building and why you're building that this way. So we're going to learn a lot through this, and hopefully people will find that it's an interesting thing to go through. So Mint Spider in the IRC says he remembers the most asked for Mintcast episode being the one about SED. So he thinks we're on the right track. And that's right. We did that episode on grep, SED, and awk. And it was a riot because it was a deep tech dive into three tools that were just weird. And it was a lot of fun. And we got a lot of people asking about that after the fact. Let's see.
I posted an XKCD.
What's that one?
It's the one about, like, talk to your friends about Linux before someone else does. And it's it reminds me, it definitely reminds me of my dive into what has become of Linux, where at first was like, oh, this is cool. I think about giving it a shot. And suddenly I'm, like, off and running around in, like, an arch and read about drivers and kernels and
crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like.
So Swift110 says, I just hope the show isn't shorted. I'm not sure what you mean by that. We're not specifically trying to produce a shorter show. We've tried to do that over and over again, and we fail constantly at it. I don't think we can do a show that's shorter than, I don't know, an hour and a half or so. That seems to be our minimum time.
This is the Mintcast filibuster.
The Mintcast filibuster, yeah. And I don't think it's possible for us to do a show that doesn't have multiple sidetracks either. No matter how focused we get on doing this, we're gonna wander off into the weeds talking about something or other. I think what we're really trying to do, and Isaac, chime in on this as well, I think we're really trying to figure out what it is that's different about Mintcast that would cause somebody to want to listen to it rather than some other podcast.
So I'll go ahead and chime in on this. I used to listen to a bunch of Linux podcasts, and when me and Rob were talking about trying to change up the format, I mean, we realized that there's absolutely nothing different from Mintcast to any of the other Linux podcasts out there. As a matter of fact, if you listen to most of those Linux podcasts, they're all about one and the same. In the sense that you get some news, you might get some tech dive of some or some distro overlook. That's really about it. And while that's all fun, well, and good, we decided to change things up and become that show where we just don't do so much of the news dive anymore. Because, like Rob said, you can get that from another podcast or heck, just look at the news on the internet. But the sense that we will just talk about that which we cover, which is Linux Mint. I mean, of course, I ramble on about Arch and whatnot, but. You know, we're just going to talk about news related to that distro and then talk about what is Linux. Something we're offering, something that looks like no other podcast out there is really offering, which is a deeper dive into the Linux stuff. Now, that might get boring, but that's how we're going to take this approach and roll with it, which is just a deeper dive of the ins and outs of what is Linux, what makes up like the Linux file system, what is the Linux kernel, just, you know, what exactly is Linux. That's the whole point we're going to dive into this year instead of, hey, there's the new Manjaro release and this, that, or the other. There's hundreds of distros. That isn't to say we won't look at a distro every now and then, but that won't be the main topic or focus going forward, at least for this year. And we'll see how it is at December or this time next year. So,
yeah, we'll watch our, you know, by all means, if you're a Mintcast listener, tell us what you think about this crazy idea. You know, if we get a bunch of folks who are saying, oh, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of, and you guys are just plain not smart enough to do this anyway, then maybe we'll rethink it and do more interviews with smart people. But, you know, this is very much going to be a non-expert's experience at building expertise in Linux. Because neither of us... Yeah, neither of us are really wizards at this. You know, Scott was really a lot more knowledgeable, and some of the other hosts have been a lot more knowledgeable about Linux than I think either of us are. And so this is us trying to really learn more about the underpinnings of Linux. And so that's kind of where we're going. And so if you're interested in following along on that journey... let's see. What else are there? People are talking about downloading all 258 shows. I don't even think I have all 258 shows anywhere. That's cruel and unusual punishment. But anyway, so that's where we're going. So one of the advantages of doing this, at least for us and perhaps for you guys, is that we will have a pretty reasonable idea of what we're going to do next podcast. So we've never really been able to announce that on our next podcast, we'll be talking about.
Yeah.
Because the truth was, we never had a foggiest idea what we're going to do on our next podcast. For at least a little while, we're going to know what's coming next. And so what's coming next is we're going to talk about getting ready to build a Linux from scratch system. And so if you go over to the Linux from scratch website and you look at the material that's there, there's a whole section on, you know, getting ready. And there are a bunch of decisions that you have to make about how you're going to do that. And so we're going to talk about that next time. And we're also going to talk about what is the Linux standard base? What is LSB? And is that something that we should be paying some attention to? What should we be? Does it matter? You know, they talk about it on the Linux from Scratch website like it is something. And so we'll have to talk a bit about that to see what it is we're actually trying to build. And then in terms of the kernel, there are several books around, and the one that I found that's an online book by Greg Croix. I was going to say Hartman. Is that right? No, that's probably wrong. He's a Linux developer or a kernel developer. Greg Croix Hartman. I was right. Okay, so he's got this book called Linux Kernel in a Nutshell. That's one book that you might look at. I'm not sure exactly where we're going to go on the kernel discussion, but we'll talk. Generally in our podcast, I think what we'll do is look a little bit at the news, anything that's of interest very briefly, and then we'll talk about the LFS build. We'll have a discussion on Linux basics, whatever we're learning from our build at the moment, and then we'll have a discussion about something that's going on in the kernel, some kernel-related discussion, and then we'll do feedback and stuff. So, I don't know. That's what we're going to do. What have I left out?
Nothing I can think of, you know, I mean.
Other than we got to figure out how to do this now. Like, we came out in public and told people, so now we actually have to do it. Yeah, that's always
we're going to build a wall.
We're going to build a wall. We're going to make, Slovenia pay for
it. We're going to build a distro and make Microsoft pay for it. So.
Oh, yeah. We're going to build Hey, I never thought of that. We could have Mintcast Linux. We can have our own operating system.
And one reason I like this, that you're totally right there. One reason I like this Linux from scratch idea too is this is, the steps to also building a Raspberry Pi distro. I think there's a little bit of stuff that kind of goes off on another side of that. But they pretty much said if you're already doing this, then there's only a few things you need to change. So I think it'd be cool to create one of those. One reason I really like us doing this stuff, and I think for the users in general too, or the listeners, I mean, is that with this kind of ability and this knowledge, if we can wade through all this and help someone out, it'll be more of wherever you work at or going with your own career in the future of, well, there isn't a distro that does what I want. Well, you know, F that, I can make my own. And that's what we're setting that kind of world up for, which is no longer you bound to, you know, well, because I hear all the time at all my current job and previous jobs of like, well, we can't do this because of Windows. And that's never going to change. But it'd be nice to work in a place to be able to offer up the ability to be like, hey, actually, you know, I have compiled and built my own kernel and done this with it, or I have created my own Linux distro. That kind of stuff goes miles in the workplace or in your own future endeavors. So,
yep. So I'm just watching the IRC here, and Bill MI has said LFS would be great to catch up on System D, assuming it will include it. Well, that's an interesting question, Bill MI, because LFS can be built either way. It can be built with a SysViaNet or systemd. And so one of the things that we're going to have to decide early on in this is which way
we could just go both. One of us go one way, one go the other.
Yeah, we could do that. I wonder what that, I wonder how different they are.
No.
Well, you know, systemd and SysViaNet, of course, are very different, but I wonder how much difference there is in the process of building a Linux system if you base it on systemd. And
well, what we could do, and we'll just figure all this stuff out, you know, could build one with just say systemd and then after that, do it again with Sis Vinette, set goes. But what was I going
to
say?
Well, maybe we'll have to try it both ways. Maybe, and so perhaps that's, I don't know if we'll have time to get to that on the next podcast, but
no.
But I think that's an important question that we're going to have to ask.
This reminds
and answer
me
early
of,
on, yeah.
When we covered Arch the first time around, I think my laptop was a Broadcom wireless, and it didn't Arch, and it fought it out. But on my third attempt at Arch, after like, you know, X months, I came back again after I knew Linux a little bit better and just like knocked it out of the park. I feel like this will be the same going thing, which is like round one of this is kind of like, oh, I'm not for sure. But after that, you're kind of like, now I'm getting the hang of what Linux from scratch is. And it gets a little bit stronger and a little bit faster, you know, each time. So,
yep. I mentioned to a friend of mine, well, a guy who's been on the show before.
So what is it, the Comcast PR dude?
No, it was the high performance computing guy.
Okay.
Rick Schulte. Anyway, no, the other guy, he's a friend too. That was a lot of fun.
Anyway,
so I mentioned to him that we were going to do this. And I've completely lost my train of thought. What was it that I was talking about?
What were we talking about? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It was, I totally threw you off the rails there. It was the, talking about using Linux from scratch and Arch just getting better. And after the second time around, you just get more used to it.
Oh, that's what it was. Second time around. That triggered it. So one of the things that is early on in the Linux from scratch document, it says that basically the whole Linux from scratch thing is done in one sitting.
Yeah.
In other words, you can't reboot the machine halfway through.
You can, but there was some stuff I was reading last night. It was like, heads up, be careful, or keep. It was like, keep bookmark and middle note of where you have stopped or plan to stop, because I think certain things have to be run as root, while others do not. And that's their warning of some of this stuff.
Well, and I think you have to, if you shut the machine down, when you start it back up again, there's a bunch of stuff you have to do over again.
That would make sense, too.
That's not preserved from one boot to the next. So anyway, so we may get pretty good at running the first part of this over and over and over and over and over again because of what we're trying to do. You know, we're basically trying to spread this out over who knows how long it's going to take us to finish doing this. Yeah, so we'll get really good at doing the first bit of it and each week or each podcast, as we progress a little bit further, it'll be a chance to go back and correct the mistakes that we made before. And so,
sounds like a plan.
All right. So that's the future of Mintcast. So I guess we got a little bit of feedback to get into here. So the fun thing about this podcast is this section of the podcast in the show notes is called Feedback and General BSing. As if there hasn't been any of that already.
None. You know? Absolutely none.
So we got that stuff done. So we got a bunch of emails that have come in as a result of us not being active for a while. So the first one is Highlander. And I think, Highlander, you're actually in the IRC. Although I think you may have changed your name. Wrote in and said, during the January 8th, 2017 podcast, can you talk about the Ubuntu Software Center, Vidalia, and TorChat? Or would you consider these things to be too controversial to talk about?
What is Vidalia?
So that was going to be my first observation. These things are certainly not too controversial for us to talk about them, because we don't really know what they are, and so we'll be making stuff up anyway.
Is that Vivaldi?
Vidalia, I think, is a Tor-related thing.
Is it?
Because Vidalia is an onion. You know, the Tor is the onion router. I think that...
I have not... maybe I'm missing out. Okay, cool.
A quick Google search.
I thought I did it yesterday, but
well, it's a place in London, Washington, and it's an onion. There's a Vidalia Onion Committee that
is
the
Vidalia
the
software. Discontinued cross-platform GUI for controlling Tor. Aha, bingo.
Oh, so that is the Tor browser. Vidalia is the Tor browser.
Is it?
Okay. I don't know. I always just called it the Tor browser.
No, I think it is.
You think it's something different?
Hang on. Give me a second.
So Highlander is actually in the... yeah, it's a Qt...
No, it allows the user to start, stop, or view the status of Tor. This is not the Tor browser. This is like controlling your Tor entity would be a better way to use that.
Huh.
If you see the web capture there, it shows like Vidalia showing a network map. It's really cool. Yeah, I didn't know. And you're right on the Onion concept, by the way.
Yeah, it's a discontinued...
But yeah, that's exactly what this is. I did not know this existed. Like, there you go. Thanks, Bill and Matt. It's a great way to word it. Like a Tor control panel. That's a great way to summary right there. It's not a Tor browser. Cause I use it religiously. It's still up and running and just fine.
Yeah. So the Tor browser I've used off and on. I don't really have a particular use for it. So
that's the problem, sir. You should use it because you need to use it for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
I discovered that Chrome and Facebook are hooking up in the background. So,
yeah, that's true. And you know that I don't have a use for it is exactly the reason why everybody should be using it all the time, is because then when I do have a use for it, that immediately raises suspicion and attracts attention because, oh, you just started using Tor. What are you doing now that you don't want anybody to know?
I got that from work when I told some people, I use Tor all the time. They're like, why do you use Tor? I'm like, because it's software? Because I can?
Can?
Yeah. I mean, what does that mean, dude? Like,
yeah. Well, you're using Tor because you obviously are trying to hide something.
You're
a criminal.
Exactly. Right? That's what I immediately thought of. Yeah. Like, well, he must be trying to hide something. Like, no, yeah. I just want to not, I don't know. I guess I dealt with my everything followed or tracked. So,
yeah.
And plus, it's a good browser. So,
Tor is, we haven't talked a lot about, we did talk a bit about security and we've talked about Tor and the Tor browser, but we haven't talked a huge amount about it. The Ubuntu Software Center, this is that thing that they, not Martin Wintrous in the IRC says Ubuntu Software Center is too controversial. Really?
I think he's joking, but...
Oh, he needed a smiley face after that? Yeah. Yeah, Stallman doesn't sound so loony now, does he?
No, he just looks it. He doesn't sound it, though.
Yes, he's going to turn out to be a prophet of some sort, yeah. So... Yeah, so they're not too controversial, but they may be above our intellectual capability, Highlanders. So David Bradley wrote in a while back saying, greetings, I'm interested in the Julia programming language. Maybe an item for the show in some capacity. Thank you for your time.
I have heard of... Okay, now two things on this. One, I've heard of this and never tried it. And the second would be, maybe on a rainy day when we're not covering the stuff we said we're already going to do, it might be... It might be cool to take a look at a programming or language or two related to the Linux system.
Right. Well, we're certainly, as we build the Linux system, we're going to have to talk about programming languages and programming environments and that sort of thing. Because a lot of what we're doing is compiling code, of course. And so the first thing you have to do is build an environment to compile all the code in. Mostly, though, that's going to be GCC.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, it's a C compiler.
Worship the almighty C. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Julia
If we get to the point of looking at stuff in Mint, a lot of that is written in Python as well. So they've got a mixed language, and some of it's in JavaScript. Julia, I have looked at before because I was on a bent for a little while looking at big data analytics and that sort of thing. And so Julia is one of the languages that pops up in that world because it's a...
Oh yeah,
it's a technical computing language. You know, it's
it's
parallel. I don't know that it's a functional language. It's one of these. You know, the library is written in Julia, but it's a technical computing language anyway. High performance. Its website says it's a high performance dynamic programming language for technical computing syntax very familiar users of other technical computing environments. So it's parallel, and you can put it into a Jupyter notebook and stuff
like
that.
By defining functions and overloading them with different combinations of argument types. Wow, that sounds
modern and snappy and very sexy. So, and they have a JuliaCon, so you know it's got to be a good thing. So yeah, we may end up talking about stuff like this as we get building our Linux system and want to start adding languages to them. The final email is again from Highlander. Seems as if YouTube's the only website that will play video in the Linux system. Other mainstream news websites tend to cater towards Microsoft Windows. And Highlander lists several there, cbc.ca, ctv.ca, cnn.com, bnn.ca. So they won't play video for Linux users. Why is this? Can the issue be fixed? So I went and looked at the CBC website to see if I could see what you were talking about. And what I ran into was a lot of their video is Flash video. And so if you're on Linux in Firefox, then you will have issues with getting Flash to work.
I was about to ask and say that same thing. I was going to say this related to Flash, because I ran into this with the Vivaldi, how do you pronounce it, browser.
Vivaldi browser, yeah.
Yeah, I ran into it with that. And it wasn't until I started using Chromium that everything came to, and I was like, bingo. So.
Yeah, so I would say there's an easy fix for this, and that is run a Chrome browser. So I tested this on my little Chromebook. Well, so I wasn't sure whether Chromium did it or not,
it does.
On the Chrome browser, I've got on the Chromebook that's now running Mint 17.3, it has Chrome actually installed on there as the browser, and it plays the videos just fine. And so Chromium will do the same thing.
Yes, because on my Arch distro, which I'm on right now, I have Vivaldi and Chromium, and I have Chromium only because Vivaldi was not working with Udemy, I believe is the website, when I was doing courses, because they were all
courses,
like Pepperflash or whatever it's called. It drives that. But Chromium has that. You can install the Pepperflash on Vivaldi. I keep pronouncing it differently every time.
Vivaldi.
Vivaldi. Your mommy.
Is Vivaldi the singer, the Italian singer Vivaldi?
But there is you can install the Pepperflash plugin for it, but it didn't work for some reason. I can't remember. What was it? 64-bit maybe? I can't remember. But anyway, using Chromium worked just fine.
Yeah, so it's a Flash issue, and this is one of the reasons that Firefox just drives me batty, is because I'm always having Flash issues with Firefox.
I'm laughing
because
Mock Turtle said Pilates, Vivaldi. <It's
all laughs> yeah. We don't get off track at all here on the Mintcast. We're just very focused. We just stick right to it. So, yeah. So Highlander sitting in the IRC. I'm assuming it's the same Highlander as we're talking about in the email here.
To the software center.
Yeah, you got the videos playing in Flash. Yeah, so a non-free browser. Bill Amai says no. Yeah, well, life's like that. You got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
Okay, so website. Well, I would send you off to the Linux from Scratch website. Go check that out. That's what we're going to be doing. If you have strong feelings on what we should be doing with systemd or sysvinet or stuff like that, then let us know what you think we should be doing. We're equal opportunity ignorers, and so you'll probably get ignored. So don't be offended. I'll also put up there the Greg Crow Hartman Linux kernel notebook. Linux kernel in a nutshell, it's called. I'll put that link up there as well as a website to go look at. So that's kind of where we're going. So, Isaac, do you have a book for us?
Yeah, I don't know if it's... hang on, I'm trying to get the link here. Give me a second.
Yeah, okay.
All right, here we go. I just finished this the other day. Probably not the best book to throw out there, but anyway.
Is it family friendly? That's all I know.
Yeah, maybe. I was reading a book about DARPA not too long ago, and it talked about Agent Orange, and I've always been interested in that subject, but never dove into it further. And I read a book about Agent Orange, and it's called Waiting for an Army to Die. And it's really crazy, super crazy. This is stuff that I was not around for, was not born then during the whole Vietnam era. And being a veteran myself and having to deal with the VA, it's amazing what the VA has, their past record, their past is not the best, I would say. And it's really crazy when I've read this book, what some veterans have gone through and the way we treat them and stuff. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But anyway, this book's out there. I read it. It's if you're interested in this stuff, check it out. So just throw it out there.
All right. So we'll have that link in the show notes for you to check out, as well as the one for Greg Coe Hartman's Linux kernel hacking book. Okay, podcast announcements. I think we about announced ourselves out of the market here with the Mintcast announcements already. Some acknowledgments. Kay Wisher for the Piecaster. Yay! It appears to have worked flawlessly.
Once
we got the address right. And so I think, Kay Wisher, you need to give us more notice next time. You know, you told us a month and a half ago that this was happening. And that just isn't enough time for us to remember to do it. So we had to do it the last minute. No, that is entirely on me. I saw it and then didn't do anything about it and thought, oh, yeah, that's different. We got to go figure that out. This was yesterday that I thought of this. But we do appreciate it, Kevin. It's a tremendous service that you do for the community. I mean that in all seriousness. We would be hard-pressed to progress. Oh, yeah, the default Firefox profile name. I had forgotten all about that. Remember talking about that last time?
I do. Thank you. Not Martin Wimpress.
Not Martin Wimpress. Yeah, we're going to have to get the real Martin Wimpress on here sometime, and we'll have a debate between him and the not Martin Wimpress to see, who comes out on top.
Oh, yeah, if you have any predictions, you can send them in to us, too. I forget, we had some on the website.
Oh, yeah.
Do their predictions.
Yeah, we could do that. Yep. Excellent.
So that's something else, which he had me laughing. About some of them.
Okay. So it turns out Joe's concern about the default Firefox profile name was not really particularly a concern. There was no conspiracy there, and it didn't represent a significant attack vector. And not Martin Winpress says Manjaro goes one step further by calling it Manjaro.default, so it doesn't even use funny characters the way that Mint does. So other acknowledgements. John Neustetter, thank you for the mobile server that Isaac and I are chattering away on. I haven't even looked at it since we've been on. I assume it's still running and that we haven't had any visitors. Yeah, it looks like nobody's showed up. Must be a quiet day on the mobile server. And, of course, for the Linux Mint team for this distro that we love to talk about and are going to now spend some time figuring out how did you do that exactly. So... and I think that's all that I have. What else is there for us to do before we let these nice people go?
I think that's it. I think we have rambled on. Let me see.
Is Audacity still working?
It is. It is for me. I don't know about you. But.
I think so. I've been recording stuff, so hopefully it got it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Mumble is recording anyway, so that's good.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I think that's all I got, too. I also have not yet fixed... our standard outro. So we recorded these outros ages ago, and so we've still got Scott on the outro. If you're listening live, disregard the bit about the phone number. I've been going in and editing that out before I produce the final podcast, but there's a comment in this standard outro about a phone number that doesn't exist anymore. That's how old it is. So I really, really need to be able to... I need to fix that thing, sort it out again. So
I'll try and get it this week.
Yeah, try and get on it this week again. So we'll be back on
2 weeks.
January the 22nd.
It's already flying by. Man, sorry, it's already flying by.
I gotta get busy with working on Linux from scratch. I gotta get
Christmas
whole...
shopping.
So do you have any idea where you're gonna build this, Isaac? I'm gonna build mine on my LMDE box.
Oh, that's one of the reasons I installed Debian last night, was to build it on there.
But so you're going to use Debian as the initial system and then build in another partition.
But I have a slew of hard drives that I might just grab one and use it for that as well. So we'll see.
Well, so the problem is that you have to have a host system for the first part of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I might get a hard drive slap. For the sake of the podcast, I might just use Mint.
Yeah.
But
you could do it with a live CD, maybe. Well, no, because you have to have all the... Anyway, we'll talk about all this next time about how we're going to do it. I think I'm going to do it on my LMDE box, though. So,
sounds good.
All right. Ignore the phone number. We'll see you all in a couple of weeks and talk about Linux from scratch and other basic Linux stuff.
Yep. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the Mintcast Podcast. The show notes for this episode are at mintcast.org. You can send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. You can find more information about Linux Mint at www.linuxmint.com. You can follow both Mintcast and Linux Mint on Twitter, @mintcast and @linux_mint. Thanks to Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com for our theme music, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Mint.